Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I am giving you a quick shot of romance, but author spotlight edition. And on this spotlight, I am joined by Ruthie Knox and Annie Mayer. Welcome back, ladies.
Thank you. We're so excited to be here.
Yes, very excited. Thank you.
Now, typically, this is where I read a bio, but since there's two of you, I'm like, that's going to take too much time. So I'm not going to do that. We're just going to skip on right to the questions.
Yeah, jump in.
Follow us on Insta.
Yeah.
Join our newsletter. Learn all about us.
I mean, we'll share it on the web post, but this is just too much words for now.
It is. Yeah.
So let's talk about your reading, not your writing right now. So as readers, what do you typically go to reading-wise?
I will read literally anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I love to read the book everyone's talking about. I love to like kind of do like a deep dive into some new subgenre that is exciting. So, I mean, I'll take recs that people are talking about. So I will, and I'm a little bit of a mood reader, but it's more like I would have a couple books going than a true mood reader. You know, so I might have something that I'm like, am more in the mood for, and something else I'm interested in going at the same time. So, and I think this is such a great moment for that, because there's so much interesting stuff going on in indie. There's so many great releases from trad, you know, so it's fun to read against the trend and like with the trend both. So
And that's Annie.
That's Annie.
That's Annie. That's me. I don't even know if people will be able to tell us apart. Some people can't, but I'm Ruthie. Eclectic. I like romance and mystery, which are the genres we write. I read a bit in those genres. And then I like sci-fi quite a lot. And and I like fantasy pretty well. But in both sci-fi and fantasy, I'm a little bit more picky. So, you know, the book is just either going to work or not, like 100%. Whereas if it's a romance or a mystery, I might not love everything about it, but there'll be things about it that I think are interesting, so I'll keep reading it, or I'll be trying to figure out how something works in it. I'm reading it more as a writer. You know, there's a lot of that kind of thing. I really like to read a lot of books by the same person. If I like them, I'll just read all of them. Like, I read everything John Scalzi wrote a few months ago, and that was fun, both just because I was enjoying him and because I like to sort of see what makes people tick. So they have 20 books to read, then that is a good way to do that. Like, I feel like a beat
on. I always like finding an author that has a big backlist and seeing like how far they've come in their author journey. Cause you know, those first couple books, like they might be good.
Right.
But like sometimes those authors hit like book four, or book five before they really hit their stride. But then sometimes it goes the opposite way where it's like by book 15 or like, you're like, oh man, like I feel like I'm reading the same exact thing over and over and over again, which we had a discussion in our Discord about the Stephanie Plum books and how like a lot of us stopped after like book 15 or 20 because like the love triangle was like frustrating us. And it's like, I'm sure the books are still good, but it's like, come on, make a choice.
I really admire those authors though, that can keep going in a series like that. And it's just keeps being spectacular. Like V.I. Warshawski series, which is written by Sarah Paretsky. That's a series that she started like in 82.
Yeah.
Or
oh, really?
And was like one of the first female detectives, like an amateur detective. And those books, they hold up still, like the ones from the 80s. They're interesting.
And there's one out last year. So VI keeps getting older.
Yeah.
She keeps doing the work. And like, it's Chicago set, so you actually see Chicago change. Yeah. Like, VI is talking about the area around her office and how it used to be like this, but now it's like gentrified. And
And that's nice though, that like, as like the time change of the book goes, like she is changing with the trends as well. Like, especially since she said it in a real place.
And Sarah Paretsky is such a interesting human being, very witty and funny. We got to see her at a Midwest Mystery Writers Conference this last year and enjoyed her so much. She's probably one of the most generous. She started a organization called Sisters in Crime for marginalized and underrepresented mystery writers. And she's just very generous in that way. She reaches back, like she'll talk to you. She was writing progressive genre fiction before, that was a thing.
But I do like it when there's change. Like, you have an alcoholic detective and then they get sober, books in or things like that. It is more my speed than
Yeah, I
a
mean that, and that's the thing, like when you're following these, even like the J.D. Robb series, like there's so like the couple, like they're there the whole time, but it's like you're seeing the evaluation and evolution of this couple, and it's like it, I mean, it brings a lot of truth to it, because like the longer you're together with like your partner, spouse, whatever, like your relationship isn't the same from day one to day 7,000, whatever. Because like my husband and I, like we just actually celebrated our 17th wedding anniversary recently, and like we're inherently the same people, but we're very different people because of like the way our lives have like turned out. Like we've went through things that have been tough, and it's like how we dealt with them and how it changed our relationship for good for us. Like, and so I like reading stuff like that.
Like having like a place you can escape to where you know everyone. I feel,
Yeah, you're so comfortable there.
Yes.
So, do you guys have any rituals when it comes to your writing? Like, is there like, and I think that we have talked about this, but is there anything that you have to set like the mood before you start to write?
We have two teenagers and two dogs and two cats, four hermit crabs, a lot of fish.
The first ritual is to get everybody
Fed and happy.
fed and happy.
And happy. And then it's just like whatever time we can grab, we're writing. We're not fussy. We have a
Honestly,
lot
there's nothing worse than a hangry teenager.
going
No.
on. No, there's a lot going on, so
And we do write right where we are right now, which is a dining room right in the middle of the house. So, we're pretty good. Probably our ritual is dissociating our home life.
Just taking a moment to remove ourselves from all knowledge of whatever else there is to be doing.
Coffee.
Coffee, yeah. We have
Lots of
one,
coffee.
coffee. But yeah, no, we're pretty flexible. We've both been writing for a while, and I think the longer that we've been writing, kind of like the easier it's been to just write whatever circumstances we need to be writing in. Sometimes we're in a place where we're kind of writing like a chapter every day for some period of time, and other times, it's just little bits and pieces.
Every once in a while we'll get away, like to like we'll leave everyone behind and kind of a retreat. And the intensity of the hyper focus we can achieve. No.
Yeah. But without all those, like, hey, mom, hey, mom, hey,
Is
mom.
amazing.
So recent, like, you have written separately and you do co-write under multiple, like, versions of things. Is the co-writing newer or have you always done that?
We co-wrote a book together after we had known each other, I don't know what, like 6 months or 4 months or something, a long time ago. It's not even available anymore for sale. But so we did do that very early on and enjoyed it. But we didn't co-write another book together until 5 years ago, which was Homemaker, which I think is one of the books we're talking about today. So that was the first one that we co-wrote, and that was really kind of coming in at a moment when I hadn't really been writing and Annie had been writing half books, like had a lot of things that weren't coming all the way through to the end. And so we had the
Right.
idea for Homemaker, and we, sat down and wrote it together beginning to end, and it felt really good. And so that was kind of the beginning of all the things that we learned about how much we like co-writing and how it solves a lot of problems for us. But we actually started out as just like very big fans of each other's writing.
Right.
That was how we met. So, yeah, the co-writing was, I think, just kind of like a, I don't know, like another layer of friend intimacy without, I can say this. But it was just like something that we both wanted to do and that was really easy for us to do the first time we tried it. So,
Well, but so Homemaker, you said you wrote it 5 years ago, but it's just getting released now. Like,
yes.
were you, how come you held on to it so long?
Well, we didn't hold on to it first.
It has been
So
on a long
it
journey all
has.
around the world of publishing
Yeah.
for, I mean, it's, we wrote it, we changed agents after we wrote it.
Okay.
It went out on submission, I couldn't even tell you, 3 years ago-ish.
Yeah. And I think it was when it sort of first went out on submission 3 years ago, there really wasn't anything like now. There's what I would call kind of this next generation mystery that's
I hear
happening.
like Richard Osman, Mia Manansala, like Jesse Q Citano, Jane Peck, Elise Bryant. There's quite a few. Oh, who? Yeah, like the Thursday Night Murder Club. But there's all these kind of like, not quite cozy, like a new cozy, like a new space in mystery. But when we first submitted it,
Which,
what happened was like a lot of editors read it and like took a look at it, read it. A
took it
couple
all the
people even tried, like two, three people took it all the way to acquisitions, but we kept hearing, I don't know how to sell this.
right.
Like we don't know how to sell it.
It was a
And
little bit too early on that trend. Like Finley Donovan hadn't come out.
or had just started, maybe.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so there wasn't a market space
Right.
that publishers, and trad publishers, they're coming from the perspective of 35,000 feet above the market. What are the things that are the brightest lights to grab onto versus like narrowing in and finding a lot of niche audiences? So while editors really liked it from that 35,000 feet perspective, they didn't have like a marketing strategy to
Right.
go
Yeah. And
forward
then
with
we
it.
did a big revision on it, and because there was somebody we wanted to sub it to, but she couldn't look at it unless it was substantially different because someone else at her same house had looked at it and they had a rule at that house, two editors get the same books. And we had kind of had an idea for a revision anyway. So we did a big revision on it to sub it to her, and she didn't take it. But at the same time, our agent sent it to Thomas and Mercer, and they did. And
And what's funny is the editor who took it, Liz Pearson's, she's amazing. She's a wonderful editor and very experienced. The first time she saw it at that very early spot, like 5 years ago, and couldn't take it, but this time was incredibly enthusiastic, and the whole house was enthusiastic about it because I think that space had been opened up, and they knew what to do, and so that's.
Yeah, so it was, it's kind of, it's strange how like things don't come out in the order you write them in at all. And sometimes people will infer like, oh, they've learned so much since they wrote this book, and you're
You're
like,
like, oh no, I didn't know we
years
had that.
before. Yeah, I've learned nothing. Haha. Yeah, but
Well,
yeah.
and trad pub is one of those things where it's adapted a little bit with the way the market runs, but like old trad pub, you'd buy manuscripts 2, 3 years before they even came out. So it's like you have to really look at what you think the future is going to look at in publishing. Like
Yeah.
they're usually now it's like a year or a year and a half, but like there was such a big gap between like signing a contract and like that book coming out even like 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah. It's a long process, and I think it's really difficult to try to figure out what's going to be selling, not just what readers want to read, which I think we tend to think about, but also like what will the vendors buy? Like what will Barnes & Noble even take in a year? Like they don't know. They can't really predict. So they're just trying to stay ahead of all that.
Well, in your characters, I mean, you, Ruthie, I know that you had wrote some male female books, like, but you have really focused in the sapphic world for everything that is coming out lately. Like, what made you want to make that transition?
It was actually it hasn't been as much a transition as just again one of these things where like that is it just what is what happened. We after we wrote Homemaker, we wrote four romances together in a row, and three of them were with male female characters, and one of them was Everyone I Kissed Since You Got Famous, and they were
Wait,
all
so that was male female at
No,
first?
it was the fourth one, and
Oh, I was gonna say.
it was as it is, but it was the only one that was sapphic in this. So
Although,
I
okay.
think
The other
I
got
three
you.
aren't really
They're not really het.
het. Yeah, they're not really het,
Male female.
but they're male female. And they were all kind of connected, but the one that my agent thought she could sell right then was Everyone I Kissed. So that's what they sent out, and no one really had any particular interest in like taking on a debut with four books that were connected. So you'll have those other three books. But then that contract was for two books. So that's Everyone I Kissed Since You Got Famous. And If I Told You, I'd Have to Kiss You. And
And I would
yeah.
say too, 10 years ago when you were primarily writing hets and, like there was not by any means the trad market for sapphic. Like, there's certainly we always have to understand that there are have always been significant influences in the sapphic market as far as Bold Stroke Books
Bella
or
Books.
Bella Books. Like those are publishers that have been around, since the 70s, the 80s, who have been consistently publishing excellent sapphic romance and sapphic genre fiction. And they necessarily had to focus on distribution that was more niche, not small. But niche, like they really understood how to capture that market and, and very much dominated it in many ways, still do. And then, and it was sort of, I think, felt that that's where it belonged. I mean, certainly there's also been changes in social, there's been a certain amount of social progress as far as queer fiction, sapphic fiction, and new fans, and you have this whole generation of readers where who cut their teeth on, say, YA genre fiction, and YA was introduced to like sapphic and queer fiction much earlier than adult fiction, and so then they're coming into age reading adult romance and adult genre and expecting there to be queer books. And that's how long it took really for trad, I think, to catch up, because I could not get greenlit to write anything sapphic at the time.
Meryl Wilsner's Something to Talk About. I had just happened to look this up the other day because I was doing research on something, and it was touted as by the publisher as the first trad sapphic book deal. And that's it just turned 5 years old. So it came out 5 years ago. Now, whether it really was the first sapphic deal with trad, I can't say. I don't know that Meryl Wilsner themselves said that, but I did see, the PR was trad is taking a gay, like a lesbian book. And that was like the big announcement, and that's 5 years old.
And I
So
was, I bought that the minute it came out because I was definitely excited to see a push from trad.
You know, but you know, Bella Books, like Boldstrode Books, those are trad publishers.
Yeah.
It's
But
just
they're
like,
not like big
they're not,
five trad publishers.
they're
So
not,
a lot of people are like, they don't count, but they do. And that's
they
the
do.
thing. Like those
They're
little
wildly.
publishers, they always count. Yes.
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 Yeah. But it's still not very long, right? If you talk about
Right.
like, I know Becky had said something about Sapphic Summer. And if you think
Yes, Sapphic
about
Summer.
the Sapphic Summer in 2025, it's like, well, maybe it is, but this is a space that, it's both only 5 years old, that's quotation marks, and it's as old as publishing is. It takes like
Well,
all the time to build too.
I think it's one of those things that there's so many more eyes on it now. There's a lot more acceptance of it now, like the way the world, I mean, there's still the idiots in the world out there that are,
Misogyny, yeah.
yeah, and it frustrates me to no end, but it's like I feel like there's so much more acceptance for a lot of true showing, like not like relationships are a relationship no matter who's in it, how they're in it. Like, and I think that's a big thing, but we have been inundated with emails from publishers asking us to read all the sapphic books that are coming out. And so like that, and we have definitely like we are doing sapphic summer and we're talking about the books that we're excited to read and the books that like we want to get our hands on. And it is very exciting to see that there's this sapphic boom almost that is occurring right now.
Yes. I think it's a long time coming. I mean,
I agree.
we had it was very much the conventional wisdom in romance writing like 12 years ago that no one wanted to read romances between, women loving women romance. No one, again, like so many scare quotes,
But
but
that's the thing, like
you would
there
see
are women who love women, there are men who
people
love men. Like it's reality, and it's like why can't they or we read their stories too?
Yes, right. And I think there is so much work to do in the commercial fiction space, in the traditional fiction publishing industry as far as marginalized authors. There's been a lot of conversations recently about where publishers' dollars and attention go when it comes to acquiring books and marketing and promoting books. And that's very real. And I think that it's one of these both and situations where we can absolutely celebrate the moment that we're in and continue to have that conversation. I think especially, Ruth and I are queer women, but we're also white women. And so we just really feel responsible in this space to make sure that we are making a space, that for the diversity of voices in the sapphic fiction space, because that is the only way there will actually be that, like the full buy-in on board, like liberation of our genre is in,
And that is the only way, not being for us to do it, but
Right.
that is the only way, meaning if we don't have all these voices, we're not going to get to some.
You can't. So, like, I think that that's important. Like, we actually can't get to there unless we have heard, like, we have integrated everybody's voice in that space. It's sort of like, I feel like the classic example is something like vampire fiction is over. And it's like, do you mean that like vampire fiction written by white women is over? Because I feel like there is a lot of stories we have not heard yet that we're going to leave on the table if we like take off on that. And I think that's always a question to ask ourselves as readers and authors and people in the industry is when we hear these kinds of pronouncements, from what perspective are they being pronounced?
Well,
Like,
and who is pronouncing it?
yes, 100%.
Yeah.
So, but again, it's both, and it's also incredibly exciting to see, like all the debuts, like also like, the kind of, I don't know what to call it, like to me, it's like the mentor writers, like the aspirational, the pioneers, authors who have been killing it for a long time in the space and writing very cool books. It's
But they're finally getting their recognition.
So it is fun. I'm all for Sapphic summer.
Bring it
We've
on.
been we have been in the sapphic life for a while. Well, because Becky, she found you guys with your May Marvel, Everyone I Kissed Since I Got Famous, and she like raves about it. Will tell anybody who is like, I need a book. She's like, oh, I have a book for you, and like you should just read this. And then we did Big Name Fan, and it was delightful. And then you, I don't know, we requested Cosmic Love at the Multiverse, which is Annie's book by herself. And I just, the stories that you two or individually like create, they're so layered and so complex, and your characters are so real and so, like, you can't help but fall in love with these characters as like you're going through these books. But like they have hardships, they have insecurities, like there's all of those like pieces to it. How do you write your characters so complex but keep them simple at the same time?
Well, that's quite a compliment. Thank you.
Yeah, it
I'll take
really
that.
is. We both of like the thing we're very our brains are very different. We're actually not like mind meldy,
Humans.
humans.
Yes. It's hard for people because we're both middle-aged and brown-haired and fat, so they think we're the same person. But we're quite different. Wildly different inside.
Yes, like our brains are very the way that we think, but the very strong through line that we like both absolutely have in common is that we are so interested in people. Like I would say, talking about fictional people, real people, public figures, our children, like the people in our lives is our primary actual pastime. Like, we could be gardening, but what we're talking about.
It actually extends to animals as well. Like talking about how our pet is behaving. It's like, what do you
But like, it's like, well, this time of year we'll go and we'll buy some budding plants, but then all the way home we're talking about the person who sold them to us. Like, notice this about them. Like, that's really interesting. I bet that they're like this. And then we're just spinning out on all of these stories and also the
So
thing,
you're the type who like goes to the restaurant and sees the couple like having
Oh,
a
I'm
conversation.
gonna
You're
go
like,
quiet.
are they fighting? Are they having this discussion? Like, and you just create this whole story around
Yeah,
them.
like when you went to the bathroom, he ordered another tray of olives and she gave him this look like, are you really going to eat more olives? And it was so cold. You should have seen it. It was amazing.
But I think, but it's also though kind of like we end up making ourselves like fall in love with all these people we talk about, because it's like then we're in love with the plant lady. We're like concerned about like the I think it was maraschino cherries, because I know
It
what you're
was
talking
maraschino
about.
cherries. Yeah.
This couple on a
He
very
only
bad
ate
date
maraschino
on
cherries.
a date.
Yeah, like two dishes of them.
Anyway.
I mean, I like a maraschino cherry, but that's a lot.
Yes, but then you end up feeling very tender towards those people, and so I think that is, and also as far as like portraying that those kinds of characterizations simply, it's if you're looking at the world like that all the time, you do start to understand that for all the ways that we are unique from each other, there's some things about humanity that are just what they are, feelings and emotions, and the way we people that are the same. And so we trust readers. We trust that readers, if we shorthand like a particular messy kind of feeling, that they're with us, that they get.
It's one of the things that's so wonderful about having audiobooks made of your books because we both like to listen to the audiobook. I don't really read my own books after they're out, partly because I read them a lot of times by the time they out. And partly because I'm not interested in them anymore, like as a reader.
They belong to everybody
Yeah,
else.
they're sort of, they're for readers, but they're not really for me. But an audiobook is something somebody else made
Right.
with your book. And you can hear the audiobook narrator, like you can tell when they get what you were doing with the character. Like it's very interesting because you'll be like, oh, well, that must have worked because the way she just delivered that was fantastic.
Do you ever listen to an audiobook that like is one of yours where like the narrator decides to make an intonation decision? You're like, oh, that wasn't what I was thinking, but that works a lot better.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah,
Yes.
it's really cool.
It's very cool. The person who narrates our books is Mia Hutchinson Shaw, and
Okay.
she is amazing. I would absolutely, without reservation, recommend the audiobooks of our books because she is something else.
Well, and Hayden Bishop
And
did
Hayden Bishop
Big
did
Name
Big
Fan.
Name Fan and was fantastic. And Mia is an actor or performer and just goes all balls on her. She's getting a lot of well-earned attention for her audiobooks because she is a
She's quite a
she's
performer.
quite a performer. And if I told you I'd Have to Kiss You is our sapphic spy romance, and because it's a spy romance, there's a lot of accents. There's a you know there's snippets of foreign language and foreign places, and it was and one of the main characters is a Southern belle from North Carolina, and it's absolutely delightful. And and the other main character is like has a kind of butch identity and is from Reston, Virginia. Like you really
You feel the
it's like going to a play or a movie of your book to listen to her performance of it. And that was so much fun. It felt like something completely different. It's like, did we really write this? Because this is like this is very fun.
It has to be kind of surreal though, like when you're listening to something that you created.
Yeah, it's funny because we also listened to Homemaker recently, and because Homemaker, like we said, has been, we wrote it a while ago and it's been around and we did a revision on it. I have quite a lot of that book basically memorized. Like I couldn't recite it, but I always knew what she was going to say next, you know? And that was interesting because then it's like you're watching some show you've seen 100 times, but
And you're anticipating it, but it comes out differently than you anticipated.
And that, in Homemaker, the whole family is Midwestern, but the way that she nailed kind of everybody, like she really intuited that, like a boomer Wisconsin mom is going to have a different accent than, a transplant from the West Coast. And like the kids are going
Oh my
to,
gosh, the
she's,
kids.
they, you would swear that there are different
People.
people. And I mean, that's just because you just have that feeling of like, this is why I do this. Like, I don't, once a book is published in whatever format, it really doesn't belong to you anymore. It belongs to readers. And I think there's something about like seeing, like listening to an audiobook or seeing what people do with your book, like even if they didn't like it, like that makes that kind of detaches your experience and your ego from it and makes it feel like more alive in the world.
Well, and one thing we always say on the podcast is not every book is for everybody, but there is a book for everybody. Because there are books that people have read and they rave about it. And then I read like 10 pages and I'm like, I don't understand how you can like this.
Well,
But I mean,
but
if that's
there
your
are books,
thing, go ahead. But
and at different times in your life, right? I mean, there's books needed when you were younger that you go back to and you're like, yeah, okay, this is not where I'm at anymore. Or,
Well, and like you look at it from a totally different perspective because, like, mentally, emotionally, like physically, like you're in a completely different place than you were at that point in your life.
yeah, I think we've gotten a little too I don't I wish we could get a little bit of the hierarchy out of books as far as like rankings and ratings and algorithms, because I think there's a way in which those metrics were imposed on reading culture by tech, because that is something tech can measure. It's something tech can do. Like, tech can offer you the ability to rate a book and to write a little review of it, and it can offer you like a ranked average of this book or this author's books. But I don't think that that actually is in conversation with how people experience reading in any real way, or at least not how I experience reading. Like, the activity of reading for me is not one in which I'm putting books in a hierarchy, like in my head or against each other. And so I think it does a disservice to the whole cultural activity of reading and talking about reading to focus too much on like that part of it.
Well, I very much dislike a star rating. Like, I think it's silly because, like, I can read a book and I really enjoy like the author's writing style. I enjoy like the fact that it was well edited and the structure of the book is sound, but I really hate the character. It's like, so I have to give it a lower rating because I didn't like that character, but it was a really well done book. I just didn't like something about it. And so it's like, am I wrong because like I didn't like them, but this person loved them, but they didn't think the structure of the book was the same? But it's like I also like I look at, I will admit I go into books from like with editor hat on sometimes. I'm like, I gotta stop doing that sometimes. But it's just, I hate the rating scale.
Yeah, and especially too, just because there are so many readers and reviewers who are sharing their reading and their thoughts about books out there that are it is so great, but that, you know, then they are like having to put like the stars on it or like whatever on it, and you know. Like what was interesting was everything they were saying about it and their experience about it and what and that's like true when people like whatever thoughts that they had about that. And you rarely actually read a good faith review where somebody is in bad faith just trashing a book or just like full on promoting it without, you know, because maybe they have an ulterior motive or are you don't really see those ends of the scale. Like mostly you see people just talking about their experience with the book. I don't think I added anything to your answer other
That's
than
all right.
That's okay.
other than I
We're
do
not going to rate your answer.
I do enjoy reading reviewer accounts, like, because it's just interesting to me to see people talk about books. So,
I'm a big fan of a three-star book, especially in romance. That's often my sweet spot. If somebody wrote a couple three-star books and then got dropped, I'm probably gonna look at like
Well, and so when I am coming across books, like I have a set like group of people who I trust implicitly. Like if they like it, then I'm gonna try it. If they hate it, I probably won't, but maybe I will because you know I like to go rogue sometimes. But when I find a book, like I will read the 3-star and the 2-star reviews. I very rarely like I'll like skim through the fours and fives, but like I really focus on the threes and twos because like those are the ones that like don't typically hold back. And it's like, but why is it a two? Like, is it the editing? Is it the story? Is it just it didn't click with you? Like, what made you give it this review? And then, like, I usually decide from there.
There's a reader account that has been around for like probably 15 years that I think is mostly archived at this point, called Willful, and she was an amazing early adapter of reviewing and talking about books. And one of the things that she was always said is a 3-star review is a B.
Yeah.
Like, I like your book if I give it 3 stars.
Mm-hmm.
B is good.
B is like, good.
3 out of 5 is a solid B. I'm yeah. like, yeah, it is.
So let's talk about how busy you guys have been, because Big Name Fan came out. Homemaker, at time of recording, comes out June 1st to everybody. Cosmic Love is coming out soon. If I Told You I'd Have to Kiss You is coming out soon. But then you also, coming out in February, you have book 2 of the Big Name Fan World, and then book 2 also of Prairie. How
Yes.
are you so freaking busy right now?
You know, I think this is like the evidence. Whenever you see like a creative person, an artist, and you're thinking, huh, like they've kind of gone quiet. Are they still making or writing or whatever? Like most of the time, what's happening there is like them taking all of the energy for themselves and just making and making and making.
Yeah.
And you're probably going to get just
kind of a lot. At some
an there's going to be some avalanche, some, you know, Taylor Swift like Folklore Evermore pandemic drop.
So, well, and but you said both your kids are teenagers now too, so I mean that probably helps. Like, there's not as much.
Absolutely, yes. The labor is different now.
Yeah, because mine are 14 and 11, and so I mean, I still have to drive them everywhere, but when we're at home, like, they want nothing to do with us. So like my husband and I, like, we can really focus on things that we want to do. And it's like, we make them spend time with us because,
Right.
Yeah.
As one should, but most of the time, like, they hide in like their corners and don't like come out until like they have to use the potty or are hungry.
Yes.
I
That
mean,
is true.
Sorry, we really like writing for the most part. I'm not pretending that it doesn't give us all the same headaches as everybody else, but
Right.
we really enjoy it. And so, you know, we're happy to write 4 books a year.
Yeah.
We're have a good time doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, these books weren't all written in a row or in the
Right.
same year.
I mean, clearly, since Prairie is 5 years old.
Yeah, we've written 9 books in the Prairie series. We before
Nine.
For the first one sold. So there are 9 whole manuscripts that obviously will need some work in order to be ready, but we're not writing those right now. Like, there's something written already. And then, you know, some of them are just getting written as they come due on the contracts. So, but I don't know. We're having a good time. There's a lot of writing. There's a lot of rewriting and revising, because then you get edits on all those books back.
Do you feel less stress writing together than separately?
Most of the time.
Yeah, most of the time, because there's a way that it's takes off a lot of the part of writing that requires you to generate self-confidence in your own work is like greatly reduced when you're writing with somebody that you trust and love, because
Right.
you trust them and you have confidence in them. And so even if you kind of feel like you don't know if you can do something, or something is broken, or something is bad, we don't usually feel that way at the same time, very rarely.
Well, and you can kind of separate your obstacles, you know, because most of the time when you're finding it hard to do something or initiate a task or whatever, it's not like the whole thing that you're having a problem with. It's some part of it.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes, you know, like, say I might be completely willing to do like a absolute rewrite of some, you know, 3 chapters in a row where the turning point wasn't working, but maybe it's just that, like, I can't make myself sort of make those mini outlines and checklists of revisions for each chapter. And then that's where having a co-writer is nice, because you can just sort of talk through what you want to do in those revisions, and the person can do the thing that you don't
you're
want to
struggling with.
Struggling with, like, whatever it is, and then you can focus on the thing that you don't have a problem doing, and vice versa. So that does make it
Even like the very simplest things, like maybe you have a revision due in a week and you should be working on it. And it's like 9 in the morning and your kids are at school and there's no reason that you're not working on it, but you're still scrolling on your phone and you've done that for like an hour. But if you have a co-writer who's also your wife, that person is going to be like, so are we writing today or no?
Are we doom scrolling the day away?
Even if the answer is no, you can at least have the conversation and be like, I do not want to. I feel weird. And then the other person is like, okay, we'll circle back tomorrow. Whereas if it's just you, maybe you really spiral out, like
Right.
you go all the way down on like you're not doing it. You won't think about why you're not doing it. You won't give yourself permission to not do it.
You won't be kind to
You
yourself.
won't be kind to yourself. So yeah, it does make a lot of those lonely author journey things easier.
Well, and there are a lot of authors who talk about how lonely being an author can be, and unless you find like that one author friend who you like make that connection with, like it can be a lonely job.
Yeah, I think so. And it's a I think this is true for a lot of people in the arts, like even in like the industry of the arts, like if you're editing or you're an illustrator, like if you're in an industry, I think it is lonely because creative industries are often very fast, slow, and high rejection. And so like things, sometimes it feels like things are happening so quickly or due so quickly, or you're have so many expectations that it's too fast, it's overwhelming. There's nowhere to put all of those feelings of overwhelm. Sometimes it just feels like you're sitting around and waiting and nothing's happening and you've probably stalled
No
and
one cares about your thing but you.
yes.
Yes.
And like that, those feelings I think are true for everyone embedded in an industry. And it's high rejection for everyone. Like,
Well, it's so subjective too. It's like you put your heart and soul, because I was an art major in college and I don't really do a lot of art now, but it's like critique days were the worst because you spent like weeks on a project or like days on a project, and then you sit down in front of your professor and your entire class and are like, this is bad. Like, I don't like this. And usually it's much more like critical and there's some flowery words that go along with it. But all you hear is, I don't like that. And then you spiral because it's like, I put a lot of thought into that like project.
So I think that those kinds of feelings like lead to loneliness because you're positive no one else is feeling them. And even if they're, on the open internet talking about feeling the same feelings you are, it can be hard to feel connected. And
Yeah, and because like a lot of the time when we do reject someone or we do say that we don't like we reject someone, we feel obligated to tell them why we didn't like it. And that's the part that hurts the most. When in fact, like when it comes to publishing, the reason you're being rejected is because like 99.9% of the time, what that editor does is say no. They're also saying no to you. That's the whole reason. There isn't any other reason that you actually need that's going to make you better, that's going to turn you into a good writer if you just get the reason that everyone rejected you. Like they rejected you because they reject almost everyone. That's the only reason. It's hard though to feel that way. I don't think we're really wired to feel that way. I mean, somebody at your art critique, like a lot of those people, they don't like your piece because like they're tired and they need coffee and they have barely thought about it.
Well, because none of us have slept for days.
Like they're not engaging with you. They just have to say something. So they say whatever below, whatever nonsense rises to the top.
Well, and then they get it too. So it's like we're all in the same boat. Okay. So we have Homemaker coming out June 1st, Cosmic Love at the Multiverse on June 3rd, and then If I Told You I'd Have to Kiss You on June 10th. And then we have a break. And then February, it all happens all over again. Are Are we getting more in the cosmic love world, or you've just one and done there? Because I feel like there's a lot that could happen there, and I need more.
Well, I have gotten this question to be, I mean, I wrote it as a one, as a standalone. So, and I think as an author, you can never say no, because there are things that I didn't think I would do more with or would go anywhere that ended up being a journey. So,
Well, and we are both writers for whom nothing, there's nothing more interesting than a constraint. So somebody tells you, you have to write another cosmic love book. She's just going to turn her little brain on and get excited. I have to? Okay.
but
Well, what would that look like?
it's not planned at this time.
Rolls
But
hands together.
I do have, there will be another Annie Mayer book that is, speculative, that's coming
Okay.
out, which,
That's like vague in so many ways.
okay, I don't know how much, like, you never, like,
How much to say?
your publisher never gives you some,
But
like,
you're, yeah, that's the thing. Like, you guys are not allowed to say a lot of things since you are
they
like
don't
signed a
say whether you're allowed or
contract.
not.
They're very, like,
I think you can say
circumspect.
whatever you want.
Yeah. So, well, the next book is not titled yet, because
Okay.
like Cosmic Love at the Multiverse Hair Salon was difficult to, it's difficult to encapsulate
In
what's,
one
yeah.
title.
And like the second book likewise is difficult to encapsulate. So what I would say about the second book is, if you were that girl in English class who was like kind of obsessed with the Scarlet Letter, but not for the reasons everybody else was, like
Okay.
just sort of like got into like a Hawthorian fugue of Hester Prynne, and like, do I want to write fan fiction about this? I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah. Like,
Oh.
you liked the sort of like grounded, found family, Green Bay, Wisconsin, like, speculative world and cosmic love. And then that's what's going on in the second one.
It is kind of like Scarlet Letter fanfic, X Cosmic Love at the Multiverse Hair Salon
A little bit, yeah,
ish.
ish. Yes. And
Ish.
ish. So that one, I can just kind of give
Say
like a
whatever you
tiny
want. Yeah,
synopsis,
you
can I?
can. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, in the simplest terms, is about a near 400-year-old curse that starts in the Massachusetts Bay Colony and has found a terminus in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Of all
Kermit Bay.
places, all
Yes.
places,
Yes.
through a cheese
Wherein,
hole.
yes.
Yes, through a cheese hole.
Sorry,
Sorry, I just couldn't help myself.
yes.
A cheese portal.
Yeah. Like, wherein there has been a battle between Puritans and,
Okay.
Victorian style Puritans and the devil all this time, but both are mortal. And so it's being passed generation to generation, where there has always been a Puritan always fighting a devil who is like an, yeah, but
So it's like Star Wars. There's
yes.
always a Jedi, always a Sith. Okay.
And but also, like, has the devil and the Puritan ever fallen in love before?
Yeah.
For example,
Were they
yeah.
ever both girls who grew up together and were in love with each other
Yes.
before the curse?
Now, do they know about the curse, or is the curse like a secret society type?
No, but maybe they haven't been told everything they should
Yes.
have been.
Yes.
In fact,
Oh man, this is gonna be so
yeah,
good.
maybe there's things they should have been told, but
There's
their dads who raised them, did not maybe tell them everything.
yeah, because their dads fought each other and didn't
Mm.
tell them everything. And so,
Yeah, there's good. So there's good generational stuff. There's good found family stuff. There's great. Like Scarlet Letter-ish Hester Prynne fanfic. Well,
oh man,
there's an
there's a
immortal.
There's a lot happening in that book.
Immortal Dog, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that also coming out in February?
No. I actually don't think I have a release date on that, but it is well along in the like
Process.
final editing
Yeah.
processes, but there's no title or cover yet.
Yeah.
So
It'll probably be next summer sometime.
yeah, probably. So, or I mean, I could see summer, I could see like fall to get it into sort of
Yeah.
that feel of the
The
season.
spooky season.
Yeah.
Oh, not
Yeah.
fall season.
Fall season. But yeah, so that's what I would like to think, that if you liked Cosmic Love, you'll probably like this one as well.
I mean, I am liking all the things about it because it is very intriguing
Yeah.
and very different from anything that I've read or heard about that's coming. Like, that's one thing I like about your books is it takes something that is like common in a sense, but spins it on its head.
Yeah. I
I like
mean,
to mess around with things.
yes. So yeah, there's that one
Yeah.
after Cosmic Love.
Yeah.
But Cosmic Love is that one is I'm very interested for that, and it's just a few days for that one to be in the world doing whatever it's gonna do. I'm pretty curious about.
Yeah. Like you saw a TikTok where someone had been like had their grief had been soothed by
Yeah.
it, and it was so wonderful.
So I sort of feel like that's enough. Like if we'll
Yeah.
only
Yeah.
think.
If that's the only one that you see and the only person that likes it, you're okay with it.
Yeah.
Which is
Yeah.
not going to happen because this book is wonderfully done. Like, everybody needs to read it, but it's when like it really hits somebody on a like molecular level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or the idea that I could something I wrote could have any part in somebody else's healing. That's kind of the whole banana.
Yeah.
So, yes. So I am interested to see how, because that one had a very interesting journey in the sense that, like, having this idea for it, knowing it was, out of pocket, deciding to go for it anyway, turning in my first final draft to my agent, having her come back and say, "This is a beautiful mess," going back to the drawing board, and then the editor who championed it and bought it gave me a revise and resubmit because she wanted to take it to the table and get it. And so she wanted to make sure it was really like there. And so I spent a lot of time polishing my vision in that book before. It has so much pre-work,
Yeah.
like so much
There's a
like.
lot of planning that went into that one.
Yeah. So, and I feel like this was a book that really represented a lot of support to me, like a lot of it generated a lot of creativity from all the people that I was working with at the time, from my editor to her assistant editor. It was just one of those things that felt like being able to like be in a play or a movie or something where it's not, like where you're seeing a vision like get.
Yeah, the creative team.
Yes.
Yeah.
It really felt like that.
Yeah.
I was very, so I was very, and I feel like all of the people who's been working on it post-production, like the publicist and the marketer, and have likewise really helped me and like opened it up. So, yeah. That's So I feel very eager for it to fly completely away from me and
Yeah.
get to.
Well, I hope people love it as much as I did,
Well,
because it was wonderfully done.
thank you. I have to, did you read it in order though? Because
I did. I did read it in order.
yes, you read books sometimes completely out of order, and that would be quite an experience with Cosmic Love.
This one I did read in order, but yes, I have a habit, and we've created it. We say we Leah it now, like they created a, I'm a verb now. So if I am not feeling a book, or like I am not like connecting with the character, I will skip like about 7 or 8 chapters, and then I'll read the like 2 or 3 to see if I'm enjoying it. And then I will go back to where I started, like where I skipped, and then read 2 or 3 chapters to see, like, because sometimes you miss something, and like I have to go back to like that time to see like how that like played out. And then I'll skip forward again. And then, yeah.
You told us this the last time we talked to you, and I have to say, I've thought about it many times because it is, you don't hear that very often. But also, I think it's great. And I think it's very generous. Like, it's a very generous way of approaching a book because a lot of times when you see people leave a negative review, they'll be talking about, like, I couldn't get into it. Like, I got to 20% and gave up, or I thought it really slowed down at around 50%. I just quit. Or, I didn't like this character. I couldn't stand them. Whatever. And it sounds like what you're doing is like you feel that feeling, that discomfort, whatever the reading discomfort is, and give it another chance by
Well,
moving
it's
to a different spot, which is very generous.
well,
Like,
and so I have a hard time actually DNFing a book. Like, I have honestly and truly probably only DNF'd maybe 10 books, like in my history of reading. And I think that is like why I started doing this, because like I don't want to truly DNF a book, because like, and honestly, the books that I DNF, like they're horribly edited. Like, and there's just rampant mistakes. Like, timelines are like all over the place. Like, and it's just the structure of the book is not good. So it's just, that's usually when I do it. But like, most of the time, I'm like, I want to give these authors a chance, because like, there's a lot. I read really fast. And so I always feel bad also, because like, I can read a 400 page book in like 6 hours. And so it's like, I know how much time goes into these. So it's like, I want to give these authors their due, and I want to give them a chance, but sometimes I just can't connect with the character. And it's like, maybe they're just a, like the beginning is slow, and it's like, maybe I'll really love this character by the end of the book. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I still don't like them, and I think, wow, that was not the good choice there. But I don't like to not give authors the opportunity to wow me by the end of the book. So sometimes like I'll read a book, and then I'll jump to the very end, like, and I'll read like the last like 3 chapters, and then like skip back to like the middle somewhere and read 2 or 3, and then skip back towards the beginning, and then go back. So yeah, it is chaos in my head.
I don't know.
So
I feel like that was just like the most effective advertisement you could give for your editing, like ever, because that just means that you are going to identify the strength, structure, and direction for revision incredibly accurately for your author. So
Thank you.
everybody hire Leah.
Well, thank you for that. But yeah, it's a crazy land up here. Actually, today when Ruthie and Annie like jumped on the call, I did not have my Zoom up. And so I was doing something, and I was like, oh, I got to go over to my Zoom. And I clicked in, and their faces were right there. And I was like, oh man, I jumped a little. And then I proceeded to start laughing uncontrollably, because
I
they
know.
scared the crap out of me, because they were creeping.
We were
They actually
creeping
weren't, because they, like, timing wise, like, because I asked.
seconds, but I think experientially, that is not
You just
the
felt like we were just sitting here
watching
silent.
you.
You're watching, just watching.
Yeah, that's what
Because
sometimes
I will say, like,
somebody.
my oldest will walk into a room, or like peek his head around a corner and say, boo, I scared you, just to be an obnoxious child. And so it was kind of like that, but you actually did scare me.
Because we're not your children.
like they do that to us all the time, creepy. But not even trying to.
No.
I'm
oh
just.
No. Like he'll walk into a room and say, boo, I scared you. And it's like, I heard you like clomping down like the hallway. He's like, but I did. I'm like, no, you didn't.
My daughter is
race. Stealthy.
Stealthy. She's not even meaning to be. Like, I'll just be in the kitchen doing something. And then I'll look up and
there she is.
Yeah.
So you know how I feel. Except you're on a screen, not in person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Happened.
It was a good time. Well, thank you so much for stopping by and chatting all the things and all the books, because you have so many coming out right now. But honestly, they're so good. Like, everybody needs to read them, all of them. Just read all of the books.
They may all be coming out in June, but you have the whole year to read
them.
This
is true.
You don't have to read them all in June.
Yeah.
So. Well, and if you have Amazon Prime, Prairie was a Prime read, so you were able to snag her early.
Two more days of, and even if you picked a different Prime book, you can still get her for $1.99 until midnight on the 31st. That's tomorrow.
Well, yeah, it is tomorrow. This isn't going to be out.
Yeah, it's not going to be
before
up.
That, but
he is not going to edit it right now.
Oh, but I don't do the edit.
It's over.
That's Mike Burrier's job. Once I like drop them into the drive, I say, here you go. And then that's a Becky and Mike thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I just do all the talking and the recording, and then they have to do everything else.
Yeah. Reasonable.
Yes.
Well, it's a win-win relationship there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for talking with us about. No,
thank you so much. I appreciate it. I like Becky and I were like, oh, let's, since they have like a plethora of things coming out, let's just talk to them some more because they're a delight.
Oh, thank you. So are you both.
Well, this thank you.
And would your readers like to, would you like giveaway copies of these, all these books coming out?
Perhaps? I mean, we would not say no to that.
Okay.
We will get those out.
Yeah. You tell them what to do.
And okay.
We will
send them.
We'll message to get out to figure some details out. How about that?
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.